This is Jane, we're recording.
Okay, thank you. All right, welcome everybody. This is the May 13th meeting of Harris County Med 136. I've got a script to read for everybody. Those of you who have heard it, sorry, I'm going to have to do it again. This is the president of Harris County Med 136, Neil Polanski, speaking. The May 13th, 2021, 6 o'clock board meeting of Harris County Med 136 is now called to order. This video conference meeting is being audio recorded per the Texas Open Meeting Regulations and direction from the Attorney General of Texas. Members of the public may request to listen to the audio recording of this meeting after conclusion of the meeting, and it will be posted on the www.harriscountymed136.org website. I hope that everyone is staying well during this time. The board is conducting this meeting via video conference to protect the safety of the board members and the public. I am now going to take roll call to identify everyone on the call. Please respond as appropriate. I'll go first with the directors, Neil Polanski. I am here. Barry Greer.
Yes, here.
Brent Phelps.
Here.
Adam Rodriguez.
Here.
Eric Worthington.
Here.
Okay. We have a quorum and we'll proceed. Consultants, Jane Mayer.
Okay.
Dimitri's not here, right?
That's right. Yeah, he's not on.
Okay. Patty Rodriguez? Fran Matushka, you're here, Fran?
I'm here.
Okay. Keith Arant, I see you. Keith, you're here. Bob Wimpy?
I'm here.
Okay. All right. And Patty, let's see where she is in the order here. She's number four, so maybe she'll catch on with us in a few minutes. Okay, I now ask that any members of the public or participants on this call who are not named clearly state your name for the record.
I'm Colleen Vera. I'm a Deerfield resident.
Welcome, Colleen. Anybody else who would like to identify yourselves?
Okay. And as a reminder, anybody who's joined by phone, you press *6 to unmute yourself.
Thank you, Jane. To promote order and avoid confusion, I ask everyone.
Neil, this is Glenn Summers. I guess I was muted. I announced after Colleen, but I didn't know you didn't hear me.
Thank you.
At least this time you can hear me. Last meeting, I never did get through.
Okay. Please identify yourself each time before you speak. Public comments will be limited to 3 minutes during agenda item one or otherwise at the discretion of the board. Conclude your comments with the word pass or otherwise indicate that you are finished to pass the conversation back to the group. We will now move to the first item of the agenda, and that is public comments.
This is Colleen Bear. I'd like to make a comment.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
I spoke at your March meeting when your attorney stated that Section N of Chapter 49 of the Water Code gave this MUD the statutory authority to pay for fencing on private property in Deerfield. Well, I did a little research and found that the section he was quoting came from Senate Bill 1444 in 2001, which allowed the MUD to spend funds on recreational facilities. The analysis by the Legislative Budget Board at that time, and I quote, said the bill would grant districts the authority to acquire and develop recreational facilities. Well, very logically, the argument used was that the MUDs have a lot of open public land, perfect for parks and recreation, so it makes sense to make this land more beneficial to the public. In Deerfield, you guys own land, which the residents have used for recreation for years, and you paid for exercise and playground equipment, and all that commonly fits into the definition of parks and recreation. But there's no reasonable person who would consider the Deerfield perimeter fence project to have any connection to parks and recreation. But you voted to move forward anyway with two minor stipulations. At your special meeting earlier this month, you reported that Deerfield couldn't meet those two minor stipulations, but you still wanted to give them money for their fence project anyway. You had admitted in that public meeting that you had colluded with the president of the HOA board to give them MUD 136 public funds in the name of security, so that the HOA could then transfer money budgeted for security and use it for their fence project. Well, I call that conspiracy to misappropriate funds. I can't believe anyone was cool enough to discuss it openly in the public meeting, but you guys did, and the public has it all on tape. At least one member of the board was smart enough to vote no, and another did suggest that MUD 136 pay Social Security directly and make sure that the security payment benefited MUD 136 property. Now, that makes sense. I urge the rest of you to listen closer to these two members and make sure you remember that you were elected to oversee water and sewer services. Make sure you remain in your own court and be very careful of openly colluding when it comes to the use of public funds. Also, you mentioned in your discussion that MUD 136 can legally give a one-time donation to an HOA for pretty much anything. So when you get to agenda item number 9 tonight, please explain which statute allows MUD to give donations of public funds without following the three-part test established by the Texas Supreme Court. And last, could you please give me the public email address where we can file requests for public information I could not find on your website? Thank you very much, and I pass my time.
Would those requests for public information come through your office, Jane?
This is Jane. Yeah, I can. We can put my email address on the website for anybody who has records requests, or that'd be probably the easiest thing to do.
Okay. Can you provide that information? We'd appreciate it. Okay, do we have any other public comments at this time?
Neil, this is Glenn. It's about item 9, and I guess since you guys a letter, do you want me to talk about it now, or would you like me to hold till item 9?
Well, if you talk about it now, you have 3 minutes.
Which would you prefer?
That's up to you.
Well, is there going to be an open discussion when we get to 9, or how does that work?
Yes, there will be open discussion when we get to item 9.
I guess I can take my 3 minutes now, and then we'll see what comes up in open discussion.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm Glenn. I wanted to respond to what I heard at the April 27th special meeting. My first response was respect and appreciation. What I saw you guys do in the last couple of months was follow a very good process, acted in good faith with care and prudence to ensure the best interests for MUD 136 and its tax ratepayers. In other words, I feel like you were taking your fiduciary responsibility very seriously. The agreement was created on best practices recommended by your attorney, who seemed like a really sharp guy, and has been used successfully by MUD 136 and other MUD boards. You made a strong, good faith effort to make it happen, and the fact that DVCA could not accept your reasonable terms and chose not to comply with them is not an issue with the MUD, but an issue for DVCA, and should not cause the MUD board to question themselves or try to jump through hoops to do something that is not a best practice or could put the MUD in a bad light. My second response is shock and dismay, because the next 30 minutes, I heard you guys basically do a direct reversal of what I've seen you guys do for the 2 months or the 2 meetings that I saw before that. There are 4 areas that I will comment on briefly. Neil, you asked if there were other options after you went through that process and said it wasn't going to work. That is a fair question. But my question to you guys is, didn't you already do that and have your attorney recommend the best way? Didn't you just complete the best approach? The best practices approach, why would you then lower your standards and look for another way to do it? And the follow-on question to that is that DVC has asked you for over 2 years to commit to give money to this fence project. Why didn't you just give it to them if now you're looking at trying to figure out how to just give money to DVCA? You could have saved thousands of dollars of legal fees. DVC would already have the funds committed, and you wouldn't be a gating factor to DVCA signing the contract. What changed that made you decide to just give money? Neil, you brought up the terms end run and workaround as something the MUD did not want to be seen as doing. And then you guys talked for 30 minutes, and I was shocked that you were actually willing to say some of the things that you said in an open session. And you just talked about how to do that. Brent called it out for what it was, as a form of smoke and mirrors approach, and I appreciate that. but I was very concerned. Third is that comment is that you're not looking, and you talked about giving funds for security. And I find that very interesting, having been the security chairman and involved in security for a long time, because it's a complete reversal of the MUD's position for at least the last 10 to 12 years. The ECA has gone to the MUD to partner about security patrols several times in the last 10 years, and you've consistently said you weren't interested in helping. When the fence project started, the ECA came to the MUD and said, how about you taking over the security patrol so that we could free up the funds and be able to do a complete fence and be able to easily pay for it without going into debt and keeping our budgets and all that. You said you weren't interested. You said the only way you would do that is if you took the if the money was then given back to the people as a decreased annual assessment. And then we had a joint committee just a few years ago to take a look at law enforcement, adding law enforcement capabilities, and you guys weren't interested in working on that.
You have 1 minute, Glenn.
Thank you. The last item is one that has to do with a comment that Barry stated, and that is that the perimeter fence needed to be consistent all the way around is something that this subdivision needs. And I think we all agree with that. But the fence that's being proposed by DBCA Fence Committee and Board is not consistent all the way around. There are three different areas of gaps. There are gaps actually in this whole perimeter fence that are actually caused by the MUD board itself. Your properties are not included in it. Your pumping property and your property are off of Barker Cypress. Perhaps you should be looking at trying to have those added to the scope of work and spending money to try to help have a complete perimeter fence, as Barry said, that we
need to Glenn, your time is up. I'm sorry. You can pick this up again at agenda item number 9.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Is there anybody else who would like to speak at this time? Okay, let's move to agenda item number 2, approving the minutes of the meeting of April 8th and 27th. I've got the minutes of April 8th. Has everybody had an opportunity to review those? And if you have reviewed those and you have any comments, let me hear those now. If not, do I hear a motion to approve? Everybody's muted.
Adam makes a motion.
So Brent seconds.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, I'll take a roll. Director Polanski votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps? Brent, you're muted.
Yes.
Thank you. Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington? Is Eric on the call still? Eric, you're muted.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. So that's a vote to approve the minutes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Motion carries 5-0. The next up is the minutes of April 27th, a special meeting. Has everybody had an opportunity to review those? And are there any comments, questions, modifications to the minutes of April 27th?
This is Jane, real quick. Glenn, did you mention that you were on that call? I have somebody listed, but
yes.
You did. Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry. I tried to, I was in the car, and whether it was my phone, my Bluetooth, or your system, I kept talking, but you kept not hearing. And I tried several times, even at the end of the call when Neil asked, was there any public comment on the discussion? I wanted to make some of the comments like I just made now, and I couldn't get through. But, yes, I was there, and I sent a note to the board when I got back from vacation to let them know that I was the lurker because I didn't want to be just the lurker.
That's fine. I'll just update our minutes to reflect that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any comments or questions or modifications to the April 27 minutes? If not, do I hear a motion to approve?
This is Barry. Make the motion.
Adam, second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Any discussion? Okay, I'll take a roll on that. Director Polanski votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington? Eric? I'm not hearing you, Eric.
All right, something's wrong.
Okay, are you voting? That's a thumbs up on the minutes? Eric, you may want to leave and come back. Hopefully you'll, I would say, Jane, should we just call that 4-0 with an abstention? Because I didn't hear anything. I don't know if Eric can hear us. Can you hear us? Do a thumbs up. Eric left, maybe he'll come back. Okay, let's call that 4-0 with one abstention, and we'll move on. So that motion carries. Okay, bookkeeper's report, Fran.
Hi, it's Fran Matushka. You've got a copy of the bookkeeping report there in front of you. You can see your general fund is $763,000 after we pay bills tonight. Your capital improvements fund, $1.194 million. And you can see the tech school average rate for April, 0.0135. Scrolling to the second page, you see April's cash activity, $130,077 went into your general fund. That does include $10,000 in maintenance tax that was transferred over on the 5th of April. The checks on that page are the ones that y'all did approve at your April 8th meeting, as well as checks to West Harris County, Direct Energy, and CenterPoint, blank checks that were filled in for the amount shown upon receipt of those invoices. The third page, the only receipt shown there is another $10,000 moved over from your tax account on the 10th. We have $104,527.69 in disbursement shown on that page. And just to note, we are paying Director Bees for your April regular meeting, the special meeting, and then Director Rodriguez turned in his cybersecurity training. As far as the other checks are concerned, EcoCare, that is for some pest control out at the plant. And CBAC, you'll see several months they're playing catch-up. Their invoices took a minute to get to our new offices, and we have been in contact with CBAC, and so this should get us current. We have received your West Harris County invoicing, $47,302. There are four customer deposit refunds being presented tonight, and then we did receive two of your other checks. We replaced the blank checks with these, number 10439 to AT&T for $430.53. And check number 10440 to CenterPoint for $28.99. So the only blank check that we are asking to have signed and held for forthcoming invoices is for Direct Energy. And Barry, okay to drop checks off with you tomorrow?
Yes, that'll be fine. Just text me first, please.
Got it. We'll move on to page 4. And this is how you ended your 2021 fiscal year. Bottom line, excess expenditures of about $314,000, but you can see that is almost $94,000 better than we had anticipated when we drafted this budget. And just to let you know, we did get your books out to McCall Gibson for audit earlier this week. And then the following page, you've got, again, your 12 months of actuals split out into your sewer, your water, and your other components. The following page is your quarterly investor report to get you through your fiscal year-end activity. And then we have your electricity consumption reporting, and this goes through the end of 2020 calendar year. And I believe that is all I have for y'all tonight, unless there were some questions or comments.
So we're all done. There are no additional change orders. There's nothing else on the electrical improvements. That project is considered to be final.
I do not believe we have received the release of retainage pay estimate yet.
This is Barry. No, we have another payment request to go. I was intending to get a hold of Bob today to ask him if he'd heard anything about that. Bob, you want to chime in?
We've seen the pay estimate, but we haven't processed it yet because we still have a few outstanding items on the punch list, and we can talk about that in my report.
That sounds good. Over.
Okay, does anybody any additional questions or comments regarding the bookkeeping report? Hearing none, do I hear a motion to approve the bookkeeper's report, investment report, and authorized payment of bills?
This is Barry. I make a motion we approve the bookkeeper report.
This is Brent. Second.
Brent, second?
Yes.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take roll. On the bookkeeper's report, Neil Polansky votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries 5-0. Thank you, Fran. Is Patty on the call yet?
Good evening, everyone. I'm here. Sorry for being slow party.
No problem. Glad you could make it.
Thank you. You should have your tax report on your screen, hopefully. Does everybody see it?
Yeah.
So the first page of your tax report reflects $13,087.14 in taxes receivable at the end of April. Scrolling down to page 2, you'll see your activity for the month. You had receipts totaling $1,950.49, and you dispersed $12,222.54, leaving you with $27,375.61 at the end of the month. The following page has your disbursements for May. Your checks are listed, totaling $2,608.03 and leaving you with $24,767.58 once everything clears. The following page has your collection percentage at 98.9, and last year at this time you were at 98.6, and you're 99% or better for all prior years. Page 5 has your taxable value for 2020, the tax rate and the adjusted levy on the right, and then all your prior years below that. The next page just has the breakout components of your tax rate, but for you guys, it's all maintenance. Next few pages, nothing to report, just notes and historical information. Next page down, page 9, you have one payment plan that we're keeping track of that did pay timely. And then the last page is your delinquent list. These are your top 30 delinquent taxpayers. And I just wanted to let the board know that we did hear from the appraisal district that we should be getting the 2021 preliminary values on Monday. So by next meeting, I'll be able to present those to you and see what they're looking like. That is all I have, unless you have any questions.
Patty, I have a question regarding, we have a couple very large delinquent accounts on our water and sewer side, and one in particular is listed as owner, as still an owner within the district, and an owner of the house that has the large delinquent account. Is there any interface between collection for taxes and potential action that we can take on the delinquent account from the M&O side? I just don't know how we can't collect on some of these large accounts. Let me emphasize that this person in particular is not on the delinquent list for the top delinquent accounts for the tax assessor. It's from the M&O side, the water side. Is there anything we can do on that from your standpoint?
Well, but do you know if they are delinquent for taxes?
Well, they're not showing.
Well, okay. And I didn't bring a full list with me, but I could see if they do have delinquency taxes, and I can have Hal Gordon send them a letter. Now, normally, if it's for 2020, Hal Gordon wouldn't take over until July 1st anyway.
Right.
Because that's when the 20% collection penalty gets tacked on that he would bill you for. So we wouldn't want him to do any work until then anyway. And
right.
Then what he can do is he can, send a letter, threatening to turn off water service for delinquent taxes. And in order for them to get their service restored, they'd have to pay their taxes in full. And if they're delinquent on their water bill, they would have to bring those up to clear those up as well. But that's really the only thing that he could do. I mean, if he filed suit, it would just be on the taxes, not on the water side.
Right. Well, that is a hook somehow. And the list that you provided us is the top 30 delinquent taxpayers. There are more, I take it?
There's probably a few more, because if you look at the bottom, because it says that's it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, then that option isn't open to us either way. Barry, this is about a former neighbor in your block that I'm referring to. Okay. All right.
If they don't have any delinquent taxes due, then not much can be done on my end.
Okay. We'll talk with Keith about what he can do in addition when we get to the maintenance and operations report. Are there any questions or comments regarding the tax assessor report while Patty is here?
Derek, about the $7,700, is that something that I don't quite understand? Is over 65 disabled and delinquent or deferred over 65? How does this work?
Are you talking about the asterisk?
Well, I'm talking about the largest sum. Is that something that is not going to be collected at this point?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, the deferral. So what a taxpayer has a right to file for a deferral when they have an over 65 exemption or a disability exemption. And what that does is it prevents any collections from taking place for their taxes. We can't file suit. We can't charge penalty and interest for collection costs. There is an interest fee per year, but it's not the same as a normal delinquent account. And the delinquent attorney can't threaten to cut off any like water service or anything like that. So basically what happens is they do not have to pay those taxes. They get deferred. They get every year they mount up though, so it doesn't go away. And then at the time of either their death or they sell, then all those taxes become due.
Okay,
with
I understand.
Interest per year. So
okay.
It's a way of helping them not have to, lose their home or, sometimes they're elderly and they, they're very low income.
Excuse me, guys. Sorry for interrupting. This is Demetri Millis, the district attorney. Sorry, guys. I was on a flight, but I just landed.
Thank you. Thank you, Demetri. We appreciate it.
Okay, that explains it. I'm
yeah.
Clear.
Yeah. Okay. It will get paid eventually. It just depends on a couple of years ago we had a really large one get paid.
Okay. I think it was explained to me at that time, and I just forgot. That's okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, Demetri, are you going to be on the remainder of the call?
If you'd like, Neil. I will be.
Okay. If your time is limited, we can move up discussion of the item that you're concerned with.
Please, if we could, Neil, I'd appreciate that.
Okay. All right. What I would like to do is let's go through the tax assessor's report, and then we will shortly discuss Bob Lumpy's report, and then we will move agenda item number 9 up. Okay, let's do we have a motion to approve the tax assessor collector's report and authorize payment of bills?
This is Eric. I'll make the motion.
This is Barry. I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Any discussion? Okay, I'll take a roll on that. Director Polanski votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Motion carries 5-0. Thank you, Patty. I have your check.
Okay, I was going to ask that. Thank you.
All right, we'll get them passed around along with the with Fran's check.
Perfect.
Okay. Now, like I said, we'll go ahead with Bob Lumpy and his engineer's report, and then we'll move agenda item number 9 up. Bob?
Yes, I'm here, and good evening, everyone. My report's pretty quick. Just reporting on the water plant improvement. As I quickly mentioned a few minutes ago, we still have the final pay estimate is still hanging out there. And it's about $60,000 in retainage is what he's claiming there. But there's still a couple of punch list items. We had a list of about 6 from our walkthrough out there, and about half of those have been taken care of. The remaining ones are just some alarm settings that we've got to get adjusted, and we're going back and forth between the operator, I mean, not the operator, the our electrical engineer and the contractor to figure out how we get that that adjustment made. It may require a little bit of extra work. I don't know that for sure yet, but we're checking on that, and hopefully we've got a resolution on that here in the next couple of weeks, and we can get this thing wrapped up and moving forward and just really finish it up.
This is Barry. Bob, I'm assuming the contractor is being extremely cooperative. I'm hoping he is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, he is. He's been cooperative through everything, so.
Okay. All right. I just, This has really gotten strung out here, and I'm baffled as to why these things can't get cleared up and we can get on down the road, get this thing finished up and paid off. But.
And I agree with you, Barry. I agree with you. And so it I think there was a rush to get, you know, we rushed and got the plant up and running.
Yeah.
And then we kicked out the punch list, and a couple items got taken care of, and then started scratching our head on a couple of the other ones. And hey, what do we do to get this taken care of? So I agree with you, Barry. No one wants to get it wrapped up quicker than us and the contractor. And I know Keith's ready to be done with it, and I know you guys are ready to be done with it.
Thank you, Bob. But Keith, can you let us know whether or not the punch list items at the water plant are things that you are in agreement upon? Make sure that we're all on the same page here as far as what's left to do.
Yes, sir. I mean, I think that the items that are there are items that were identified, following, our walk. I'm in agreement as to what's on the list. I'm just trying to push it through.
Okay. All right.
Excuse me. This is Barry. Bob, Keith and I talked today about this matter of this sinkhole along the Harris County Flood Control District underground pipes from the Greenbelt easement.
Yes.
We need to try to maybe push somebody at Harris County Flood Control to see if they won't respond. Find out who to talk to. And I went over there today to look at it. And I'm assuming that low spot that's right next to the two manholes on either side of the sidewalk. Keith, is that correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
All right.
Yeah, and Barry, I've been out to see it as well. I met Keith out there, and we took a look at it. And I do have a an email into flood control just to find out who we need to get in touch with if there is, you know, well, A, to confirm it's theirs. And I'm, you know, 99.9% sure that that line is theirs because it connects to flood control ditches. But just trying to find out who the maintenance manager is in that area. So we can get him on point and get that resolved as well.
Good deal. Thanks.
Listen, Neil, we need to make sure that we stay on top of this because if there happens to be any underground infrastructure failure or imminent failure of anything related to that, 72-inch flood control?
84. Dual 84-inch pipes.
Well, that's as big as the pipe that West Harris County is putting through the neighborhood.
Right.
Okay, well, we need to get that contact person, and we need to get them to accept ownership or at least give us some kind of commitment that they have that they're going to work with us on that. And we need to do that ASAP.
We'll push it.
All right, thank you. Okay, any other questions or comments for Bob while he's still here? Okay, thank you, Bob. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. If the board, at the board's pleasure, I'd like to, because Dimitri Millis is here, he is our legal counsel at Norton Rose Fulbright. We would like to have him available for reference and any assistance we might need for agenda item number 9. So if it's okay with the board, I'd like to jump agenda item number 9 up to right below 5, and then we'll take the other ones in order after we exhaust that discussion. All right, agenda item number 9. Dimitri, you're there, and you'll opine as we need you. Consider options and review.
Yeah, I'm here, Neil.
Okay. Okay, the agenda item says considering options for a review and a review agreement for participating in the Deerfield Village Community Association perimeter fence replacement project or contributing to security costs and take appropriate action. Since the special meeting of the board on April 27th, the board at that meeting decided that we were not going to go forward with an agreement to participate directly in the Deerfield fence replacement project. That was not something that we felt comfortable with for several reasons. It was suggested to us by a couple of folks that we might want to consider an alternative if we wanted to assist in a community endeavor to facilitate the homeowners association being able to participate, being able to take care of that fence project. The board discussed it at the April 27th meeting, and the board decided that we were going to go in a different direction. That different direction has been commented upon by several people, several members of the public, as well as the board. The direction that we decided that we were going to at least pursue at this point was to make a one-time contribution to the Deerfield Village Community Association for security services. That would have the effect of allowing them to free up money that they can use toward the perimeter fence project. Basically, what this would do is it would keep the mud out of the fence business. Fence business is not what we do. We were assured by Dimitri on a couple of occasions that the mud does have the capability, authority, and charge to make that kind of a contribution. And Dimitri, I would call upon you to basically echo that and perhaps take us through the agreement that you put together for us and we received yesterday.
Yeah, Neil, this is Dimitri. So under Chapter 49.216, the district is given the authority under law to provide for security services and to contract for security services. We can either do so directly with the security provider like a constable, or we can give in a way that we would do here where we're, in effect, subsidizing another party's provision of security services for the district. And that's what we're doing here. So the way that the district, the agreement is written, which is pretty straightforward, is that it's going to be a one-time payment to the DDCA, provisionally for $85,000 or less our legal fees that we've expended for determining what contribution we would be willing to give to the DDCA. So it's $85,000 less the legal fees, and it would be for the security services that are being provided to the DDCA under their current contract. It's pretty straightforward. I can't think of another provision that I think would be of note to the board. But again, we are authorized to do this under law 49.216 of the Texas Water Code. This happens all the time. Some of our district clients provide those services directly, and sometimes they often to an HOA to offset their expenses for security within the district.
Dimitri, there have been, this is Neil, there have been statements made that perhaps we do not have the authority. I know at the beginning of this meeting, Ms. Vera made the comment that we actually do not have the authority to undergo this kind of, to participate in this way. Ms. Vera, if you want to mention what the provision of state law you believe contradicts what Dimitri is saying.
My comment was asking you, you had said in a meeting before that you could just give a one-time donation for anything. That's what I asked about. The law does allow for security, but admitting that you're only giving the security to free up money so that they can use it. The question I have now is, where did these $85,000 amount come from? And I thought you guys, if it was $75,000 or more from MUD, you had to bid it out. So this is about $50,000. Are you sure that it's properly so that you can invest in it? That's my question.
Ms. Vera, first of all, there's no way that I said that the district could give money for any purpose. If we give money for something, it has to be for an express authorized statutory purpose under relevant law. I don't know how that was confused. Security is one of the things that we can provide, and security services is exempt from the bidding requirements under Chapter 49 of the Water Code as well. Again, we represent close to 50 water districts, and as a firm and as a practice, we've been representing them for probably 60 years. These types of agreements have happened often. Many of our districts have entered into exactly this type of agreement, so I don't think there's anything that we're concerned about related to the lawfulness of the agreement.
Yeah, I agree that you have the right to do security. I'm just concerned because this has nothing to do with security. You're only doing that so they have the money for the fence, and you've admitted to that. So that's my concern.
Well, I mean, money is fungible. So if we're giving them $85,000 minus legal fees for security, then they're going to have that much more money to do what they need to do for whatever they're legally authorized to do. That's not really our business. This is easing their financial burden, and that the easing of that financial burden may make it easier for them to do the perimeter fence, but that's not what we're entering into an agreement for.
Okay. Are there any comments from the board or from the public in regards to the agreement? Because we didn't receive the draft agreement until yesterday, about 24 hours ago, it was my initial thought that tonight would be the night that the board would make a change or two and then perhaps vote on the agreement as to whether or not we wanted to go forward. Because the agreement came to us yesterday afternoon, I think that it would be prudent and it would be public-minded for us to give this at least a couple of weeks, perhaps even our next meeting, to post this on our website, post the draft agreement on our website, and then discuss it. And if there are changes that need to be made to the agreement, then we could make those with an eye toward having the board vote on this in June, in our June meeting. Notice I did not say approve it. I said vote on it because I don't know what's going to happen. That is what my intent is, given the draft agreement that we have before us right now. Dimitri has told us on several occasions that the MUD Board has the ability to do this. And so it's just a question of whether or not we feel comfortable in doing this, and this will help out the community association. I was kind of hoping that Eric Toure would be here on the meeting tonight so that he could answer any questions in regards to the use of the funds that we would be donating to the DVCA, but I'll have to rely on discussions that I've had with him for those representations. Are there any additional comments from the public or the board on this at this time?
Yes, sir. Sorry. Go ahead, Glenn.
No, go ahead.
Jonathan, go ahead.
This is Jonathan Hopko. I didn't get to name myself earlier. I was on mute. That's my fault. After reading the agreement that you sent to me, Neil, I commend the board on being a benefactor to Deerfield. My concerns come in when the discussion last meeting was how can we subvert getting around the agreement and donate in some other way so that we can still have the fence move forward, especially after the certain situations that I have dealt with some of the Deerfield board members. And to hear you even say we're making this donation so that they can free up money to do the fence kind of goes to that line of thought. But don't misunderstand me. Anytime the MUD is wanting to help Deerfield Village with their law enforcement services, I highly approve it. But if this is being done to subvert and have Deerfield Village say, hey, we got the money, we get to do the fence, even though the vote stated otherwise, I have a major concern with that. But I do commend the board. Deerfield would love to have money for SEAL. I'm done.
Let me make one comment, and I don't have the information directly in front of me. But Mr. Hopko, the vote of the community was overwhelmingly in favor of the fence. It was, the number of people who voted. The last thing that I saw was that 90% plus of the people who did vote. Voted for the fence project. So I don't know when you say that the community doesn't support or didn't vote for it, I don't know exactly what you're referring to.
I'll be happy to explain that to you. We had a vote, and in our bylaws, the bylaws state if you're going to vote by proxy, you need to go ahead and have a notarized statement stating who can vote for that proxy for each lot, along with the vote. None of that was done, and literally the only person that was ID'd and confirmed that their address was an address with an ID with a vote was me. And if you look at the charge services, it says you must have the assent of 2/3 of the then members. So the quorum would have been 2/3 of the members or 700 people. You only had 400 people vote yes. So that's why I'm saying, first of all, they didn't follow their bylaws. Second of all, the vote
isn't valid because the charge authority had a higher standard than the bylaws had, because the bylaws stated that it's one-third of the total community or higher if it's stated otherwise in the protected covenant, which the charge authority is part of the protected covenant.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt you with this. Hi, Eric. I'm glad you're here.
I just wanted to address that whenever you get a second.
Okay. I just wanted to talk to Mr. Hopko about his assertion about the election. I do not want to get into the weeds on this at all in regards to how Deerfield conducted their business in relationship to the fence, because agenda item number 9 is specifically for us a consideration of a draft agreement to make a donation for security. Now, if the directors of 136 decide, based on information that they receive from everybody, that the donation for security is not something we're comfortable with, then the directors of 136 will not approve it. But we're not potentially voting on an instrument that has anything to do with the fence, because we're not doing that anymore. We didn't get the comfort level we need.
Yeah. Okay. And that's why in my opening statement and comment, I never brought up the vote. Mr. Chairman, you're the one that brought it up. I never did.
Okay. Point taken. We're not going to talk about that to any extent. We're going to talk about whether or not this donation, this agreement, is something that the Mud Board, A, can do, and B, should do. Whether or not the DVCA frees up money to do something like pay down the loan on the fence, that is something that they have to decide. And because this agreement doesn't have, it specifically does not have language that holds them to do anything in particular, it's just a flat donation for security. And we hope that they use it in such a way that most benefits the community. But it is not about the veracity of how they conducted their vote. Eric, do you want
to? I understand that. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Jonathan Hopko. I understand that. But based on your statement earlier that we're doing this so they can free up money so they can do a fence, kind of leads to that assessment that you're doing this so they can do it. What you're telling me right now, if the board approves this document, you are not agreeing with Deerfield and approving the fence project. You're only, out of the benefit or out of the goodness of your heart, giving us $85,000 minus attorney's fees for security. You have no sway one way or the other on the fence. You're not approving the fence as per the vote earlier.
That's correct.
The document is standalone. Okay.
That's correct. I mean, the document, the draft document that we sent to you, it says that specifically. It has nothing to do with the fence at all. If they use it to pay down the fence, that would be a great thing, because they could take out the loan on the fence for 15 years, perhaps, instead of 20 years. If they want to use it for something else, we have no control over that. If the board decides that they want more control over the money that we provide to the DVCA, then the board will vote against this agreement.
So, Neil, this is Glenn Summers.
Yeah.
I do have a question, because over the last 10 to 12 years, we have repeatedly come to you and asked for you to partner and to help us with security, which you have repeatedly refused to do. Now that there's a fence and an agreement about the fence didn't work out, even though you guys did great work, and I compliment you for it, and I compliment Dimitri for the work that you did. I'm very impressed. But now all of a sudden, you're giving money to security, which you have consistently refused to do to help Deerfield and security, with the idea that it could go to the fence, it just doesn't pass a smell test very well. It feels like you're trying to give money to the fence, which you couldn't make work with the agreement because Deerfield wouldn't meet with two of the clauses, including basically authorizing the note that is on record for the March 7th or the March 9th meeting where Eric sent a letter to you guys requesting the funds and that everything was legal. Their response last month was that they couldn't, it would be too expensive to be able to provide a, and those are your words at the 427 meeting, that it would be too expensive to provide a letter that basically says that what Eric wrote to you on March 7th is accurate and true and followed all provisions. There's something about it that just doesn't feel right. And I'm not questioning that you have the right to have security, because we know you do, because we keep asking you to help us. But it just feels really, really odd. And for me, if you talk about black and white, this is really, really, really dark gray as to what you guys are doing.
Glenn, apologize if I'm prompting you from coming to the table, but the request that went to the HUD for help, funding wise, did they go through the board? Because I don't remember, at least in the past 5 years, us coming to the board asking for money for security.
Yes, we have. We've gone to the board, and Neil's been involved in that. Eric, I believe you went to them when Lynn Byrd and all that was talking about trying to have them take over the security patrol for us and see if we could work something out. And I remember, I probably have notes on it from Eric, from you, saying what Neil's response was, that the MUD was not interested in doing that, and that if they were to take over the security, they wouldn't actually let the money be free for Deerfield to use for a fence at that point in time, but would they would demand that we would reduce the assessment by, so it's $250,000, $250 a house. And then also in the last few years, we had a joint task force that Eric, you and I were on with the MUD, about the concern that SEAL doesn't provide law enforcement. And there was, I think it actually came a suggestion or thoughts coming from the MUD originally, that we should try to figure out how we could have a Harris County Sheriff's Office constable patrol and maybe do a shift to that. And we had a number of meetings and talking about it, but it never came to fruition. So yes, Eric, there have been plenty of requests over time. I have documentation over the last number of years of several times that we have come to the board, and because I don't ever delete a note, I have all of that to be able to say that.
What I'm not saying that you've never gone to the MUD board. I'm saying that we haven't repeatedly gone to the, it sounds like you're making it more dramatic than it is, that we've repeatedly gone to the board, and I assure you that I haven't repeatedly gone to the board. Have we gone a couple times? Two or three times, possibly.
We've gone several times in the last 12 years, Eric.
Yeah, but not necessarily in this context. It has been with the MUD maybe taking over security.
In the last 3 to 5 years, we've gone to the MUD. We've gone to the MUD at least twice.
Neil, this is Demetri. Can I add a few things, please?
Please.
Guys, this is an elected governmental entity. There's nothing in the law. This isn't a criminal court where the intent of the elected officers are up for debate. It's a question of whether they have an authorized power under law to do it, and they do. Whatever the intent of the elected officials is, that could be taken up at the next election, but that's not something that would keep the board from deciding legally authorized to do. If the intent of legislators was in question, and nothing would ever get done. It's just not something. Again, this isn't a criminal court. They have the power. They've been elected. If they choose to do this, they're well within their right to do it. It's been done literally hundreds, if not thousands, of times.
I understand, Dimitri, and I appreciate it, and I totally agree that what you're saying is true. Have you listened to the recording of the 427 meeting?
Have I? I have not.
What's your point, Glenn?
The type of things that you talked about in open session about how to subvert what you were trying to do and come up with an alternate plan that could get around what you had done so well, following best practices of what Dimitri has said as best practices of both MUD 136 and other MUDs, that discussion was just, I think, if the majority of our constituents, your constituents, the people here in Deerfield, were to hear that agreement, that discussion, they would not be very pleased with what it sounds like, because it didn't sound up, a high integrity approach.
Excuse me, Glenn, but
some of your board members actually were saying, "I'm a bit uncomfortable with this. I'm not sure." I mean, it was a flabbergasting conversation that I listened to.
Excuse me, Glenn, but I did not want to use the word. First of all, I did not use the word subvert. And when I was referring to using the word workaround or end run or something like that, I said I was using it in the context in which I said people may perceive what we are doing as either of those. And I want to make sure everybody understands that if we free up the money via donation to do this, then they can perceive it. However, everybody's going to perceive it the way they wish. It is not our intent to hoodwink anybody. But if you want to perceive it that way, that's up to you. Another thing that you asserted in your letter that we received about an hour before the meeting was that we specifically referred to you in regards to people that were doing things that were not in the community's best interest. Not once in the April 27th meeting did I mention anybody other than board members by name. I didn't use any names of anybody at that meeting, and go ahead and listen to the transcript. Because we didn't say anybody's name in particular.
That's why, Neil, if you will read what I wrote, it does not say that you said it about me. I said it was indirectly because I'm in that class of person that you call anti-community.
Well, when it comes to
anti-community sentiment is your quote.
Well,
and I don't think that's proper, since you brought it up. I don't think that's proper language for a president of a government board to call its constituents or members of its constituents anti-community, because I will tell you that everyone who has concerns about this are as much pro-community as you are. They
okay.
just have a different opinion. But you brought
this
up. I wasn't going to in this meeting.
How come with notice about the MUD board meeting and the agenda posted publicly and listed on Nextdoor and listed via email and listed on our website, how come the only people that show up for these meetings are the two or three people who are here today? If there is such widespread community sentiment against any kind of community donation that we are doing or the fence project or anything else, why isn't there a groundswell of people here today? When you talk about, Glenn, when you talk about, you know, there are people who would not like the way that we refer to this project and a workaround or an end run or something like that, everybody has their perception of what we do and what you do. Everybody has or is welcome to have their own perceptions and their own interpretations, okay? That doesn't mean, like Dimitri just said, You can't tell us what our intent is. If our intent via this instrument that we have here is to free up money from the community association so they can do something to better this community, then I sleep really well at night knowing that we're going to provide money to the community association versus people who are trying to keep this project from happening.
Which project are we talking about?
Which project?
The funding going to security, or are you talking the fence?
Security, the fence, anything. Pool, okay. Pool rehabilitation, tennis court rehabilitation, patio home streets, anything.
Okay. You mentioned common area things, and to go back to what you stated, Neil, this is John Panopko. You stated, where are the people and why do they only show up at your meeting? At the last or two meetings ago, Eric didn't even show up on your agreement. He wasn't even in the meeting. And you only have Eric here right now, and you were stating earlier you had really wished that Eric would be here. Where is the support that you're talking about? You have the people who are saying, hey, the board is doing something wrong. Don't misunderstand me. Giving money for security, I am a neighbor just like you, and that is the best thing ever. But I think it is inappropriate for the MUD to say and give Deerfield a little edge to say that the only reason we're doing this is to free up money for the fence. Because if that's what it is, then yes, the appearance of collusion is there. Doesn't mean you can't do it, but the appearance is there. But I do commend the board if they're going to donate money to SEAL. That's great for our security. Thank you. I do.
And Neil, I did try with him the last meeting. As I replied to you, I had some internet connection problems. But you guys still have my support.
Dimitri?
I'm sorry, Neil, what was the question?
No, I'm just curious. There's a lot of words that get floated around here. Subvert, collusion, and
yeah, guys, we're not, this isn't, yeah, this isn't antitrust. These are elected officials. As long as whatever decisions they make is in an open meeting with proper notice, which it is, and it's an authorized power given by the legislature, which it is, the district can do this. You may consider it unwise, and if you do, then don't vote for these directors at the next election, but they're well within their power. At this point, it's up to the board to decide what they want to do. If they want to enter the security agreement, they're legally allowed to do that. Period. There's no debate about it. So now it's just a matter of whether or not they want to do that within their elected power.
This is Adam.
And Dimitri, this is Glenn. We understand that. We just want to make sure that they understand how some people are perceiving what has been said and what is going on. And I am with Jonathan 100%. I applaud the MUD giving money for security. And Eric, I hope we actually use it for security, because the board, at the board elections, and Terry Gray has come to the security committee, and you guys have come to us with a number of items of security that you would like us to address and to look at. And we also, yeah, we have a number of, but you said we don't have enough money to do it without reducing our SEAL coverage. The MUD providing
money. Excuse me, Glenn, excuse me. This is not an HOA board meeting. I think you need
I'm
to.
I'm sorry, I was just
this
speak.
Is Barry. This is Barry, okay? And I'm not sure who of the three of you all, where all these people are behind you. I really am sitting here trying to be patient with you all, but I don't understand where you're getting all this support from. All I ever hear is Mrs. Vera, Mr. Hopko, and Mr. Summers. That's all I ever hear from. And
the only one you've heard from.
We are going to consider this agreement here at the next meeting, whether it's a special meeting or the regular meeting, and we will vote on it, just as Demetrius said, as elected officials. And if you don't like that, then have somebody run against us next election. I'm out. Barry.
That can be arranged, Barry.
Adam, you have something to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one, or address one of the comments Glenn made earlier about the past support, and I'm going to speak just for myself here. I probably have not supported the MUD making contributions to security in the past, and the only reason I am supportive of that this time is that we had an issue with theft at the water plant when we were rehabbing our electrical building, and the Deerfield with SEAL provided a mobile security unit at the plant to monitor it. And to me, that goes a long way. We didn't pay them anything for that at the time. So like I said, I am looking to support a one-time contribution. No guarantee I would support it again. But, like I said, for this one time, I do plan, unless something drastic changes in this contract, I do plan to support the money for security.
Yeah, and that's great. And hopefully Deerfield can use it for security, as you guys have sent us, because we have a lot of security requirements as well. And board members that have pushed and communicated the need for some enhancements in security. So I applaud this change. The one piece that I am surprised that you didn't put into it is the fact that if you're asking for that, I thought you guys would ask us to actually tie you guys in. I think on the 427 meeting you talked about it, but actually have a tie-in that we actually add your stuff, your property, into the SEAL patrol. But I fully expected that if you did a security, you would have added that in as part of the give back for, or part of the responsibility of Deerfield would be to tell SEAL that we want to expand their patrolling to do a more thorough patrolling of your area, because they don't actually patrol your area directly. They get close and they see it and they're watching, but we could try to actually do more for you.
This is Neil. The intent of the agreement, or the proposed agreement, is not for us to tell Deerfield how to run security. Adam just said that one of the things that made him feel positive about this was the fact that SEAL was very cooperative during a time that we really needed them. When we write the check, when and if we write a check to the Community Association for Security, if they choose to use it for upgrades, great. If they choose to use it for and whatever money they put toward the security contract, they save and they put it toward another use, so be it. It will be an issue that you can look at with the Finance Committee of Deerfield as to how that money is allotted and how that money is used. It's not our call. If we end up writing them a check, it is not for us to determine how they use that money. It is for security, and we hope they use it for that.
Thank you for that clarification.
Are there any additional comments from the public or from the board regarding this? Speak now, folks. Okay, what's going to happen at this point is we may have a special meeting. I'm not sure how we're going to handle this to determine whether or not we're going to float this draft agreement toward the HOA board, because the HOA and the MUD are signers on the agreement. So it's not an agreement that we're going to dictate anything, but, I mean, we've put it together. It's a very simple agreement, so the DVCA, Eric, and the board need to look at that and see if it is acceptable in the way that it's presented, or if they recommend that there be changes to it. And then at a future meeting, either a special meeting in late May or early June, or at our regular meeting in June, hopefully we can put this to bed and decide to either approve an agreement or not. Eric Touré, do you have any additional comments?
No, sir. As Adam mentioned, the Deerfield Village team and the board have always worked well together. You guys had a need. Our team came through, hopefully so did the SEAL team, and Glenn's comment about us perhaps patrolling that unit a little bit better, I would consider it regardless of the contribution or not.
Okay, thank you, Eric. Mm-hmm. Dimitri, do you have anything to add before you leave?
No, nothing in particular, Neil.
Okay, thank you for attending, Dimitri. We appreciate it.
Anytime. Have a good night, guys.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Dimitri.
Okay, well, for the purpose of discussion, that agenda item is, we've exhausted that for the evening. If you have any additional comments or questions you think of, feel free to communicate to those to the board in any way you wish, phone, email, whatever, and we'll address those. Okay? Thank you for attending. If anybody drops off, if not, you're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting. Agenda item number 6, we'll go up there. Jackrabbit Road, PUD matters and take appropriate action. Who, Brent, you went, right? Brent, you're on mute.
Yes, I attended that Jackrabbit Road meeting last night, or on Tuesday. And I just do a brief update. In contrast, our 99% collected on taxes, they're 96.4% collected, just not far behind us, but a little bit behind us. Their engineer did talk about the flood wall construction. They don't plan to bid that, because he feels the costs would be too high at this point. They're going to wait and bid it later in the year just because of material problems, and it wouldn't be done in time for this hurricane season anyway. So that's pretty much postponed. The SCADA project, they reported complete. They are planning to do, they have one new director. They are planning on doing a tour. I did mention to them that if they schedule a tour and there's space, let us know of the wastewater treatment plant, that we would be interested and have an opportunity to attend. So they're going to get back with us. Their guy from Infomark, Adam, I think Keith knows him. He may be reaching out to you, Keith, about coordinating that visit.
What's a tour?
I'm sorry, say again?
Just Adam, what's a tour? That's not T-A-R-D, right?
Tour.
A tour, like a visit.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'm with you.
I apologize, my microphone is, computer mic is not that great. Yeah, a visit. They're going to do a plant visit or tour. So, let's see, one other. They did talk about this agreement between MUDS that 183 referenced when they were interested in shutting us off. And they call it priority agreement. That group apparently had a meeting on April 23rd to discuss that particular agreement. However, Jackrabbit Road, who's a participant in that group, said that agreement is below or subversive to another agreement they have with UD6. And so their agreement with UD6 is priority, and so they're not going to participate in that particular one. Anyway, the resource sharing group. That was kind of interesting. And one final comment, they did say, their attorney reported that based on action at the state, that the training that we were supposed to do in June is not required on the internet security. So I don't know if Jane, if we have a update if you haven't. I mean, they told them they don't need to do it and said for meds it's not required.
This is Jane. That's my first time hearing that.
This is Neil. Is there a problem with us taking that 1 hour training?
It's each individual. I'm just telling you what they said at their meeting. We may have all already taken it. I don't know.
I just took it 2 days ago.
Yeah. Well, their attorney reported that the legislature changed that for municipal districts or other districts that have full-time employees, and that the full-time employees are the ones who would be required to take that training.
Well, I would say, unless we hear otherwise from Norton Rose Fulbright, we should all fulfill the requirements as they've been expressed to us, and we all need to individually take that cybersecurity training. I did. It took me about 1 hour and 5 minutes, and I was done. So unless we hear otherwise, by June 14th, I'd like everybody on the board to take that training.
This is Adam. I'm wondering if it would be in our interest to look into forming a resource sharing group for situations like when our generator goes out.
This is Barry. I was thinking the same thing, Adam. Brent, I don't know what your thoughts. You didn't expand on their comments about sharing, resource sharing.
Yeah, well, if I can interject, I actually attended the meeting that Brent is referring to. We operate another system that's part of that joint agreement. And then also, you know, given how 136 was affected in light of that agreement, I attended it with kind of 136 in mind. So I'm not as involved in the other deal that is part of that agreement. I can tell you, I was not aware of Jackrabbit, but I can tell you that there's other districts that are contemplating kind of stepping out of this agreement just because it's proven. I think there's some concerns and frustrations, and again, I don't want to speak for anyone other than us, but I think there's some concerns and frustrations kind of tied to that agreement. What I would tell you, Adam, is specific to 136. Really, kind of most of what surrounds you guys is part of that agreement. Should you guys want to, you know, approach them about possibly, you know, entering that or joining that, certainly a conversation that can be had. I can coordinate with Bob. I know kind of the engineer that kind of runs the show on that deal. It's primarily tied to Langham Creek. They're kind of the managing district of that agreement. So certainly if that's something that you guys want to pursue, I'm happy to try to help make some of those conversations happen.
Well, this meal, really, there's only two options that we have, and that is if we're going to be in a resource-sharing agreement, we have to be in it with either 183 or Barker Cypress, right?
Right, and they're both parties to that existing agreement.
And if we have interconnects with them, then whatever resource-sharing agreement they are in, we would need to be a part of that as well. Although, you know, I'm not so sure that being part of that resource sharing agreement would have helped us in February during the freeze, because at that time we were cut off from West Harris County. West Harris County wasn't providing water to anybody in the resource sharing agreement, so they cut us off too, and then our generator failed. So, I mean, it was just...
Again, I don't know all those, you know, I don't know what all was going on behind closed doors. You know, what I do know is that we began to have water supply issues, if you guys recall, from 183. And Neil, I don't know if you remember, you called me that morning saying, hey, what's going on? And I said, I have not heard a thing. Let me start digging. And then not long after that was when I got the call that said that they were going to activate this plan kind of right in the middle of the storm. And at that point, you know, there were several members of that group that elected not to kind of, and you know, activate the plan because we were already 3-4 days into the event, and now all of a sudden we're going to try to activate this deal to, you know, pull everybody out of the mud, you know, and so, I mean, the rub for 136, and I mean, you guys are all saying the right thing, but the rub for 136 is that the way that the agreement's written and kind of the flag that 183 waves is, so long as we're on interconnect with them and that resource sharing group is not actively deploying the plan, then we're all fine, no problem. But the way that the agreement's written is that if 183 is providing water to 136, they activate the plan, then 183 closes our interconnect, and that's that. And that's ultimately what happened. You know, the frustration for me, again, just kind of having you know, attended that meeting with 136 in mind, is, you know, they activated the plan, but then they really didn't enter it, and 136 sits there for a night without water. You know, so there's various kind of rubs, you know, in regards to the plan. But
Keith, is there an actual document?
Yes, sir.
A resource sharing agreement?
Very, very, very lengthy document, yes.
Can we get a copy of it?
Sure.
Let's do that first. Let's get a copy of the document, see what it says, and familiarize ourselves with it. And then once we have the document and we've looked at it, then we can decide what action we want to take.
Sure.
Why don't we proceed that way?
That's perfectly fine. And not to put the cart before the horse, but you know, if 136 nod your head and you say you guys want to proceed, I'm sure that there's going to be water modeling required and everything else by the engineers to say, hey, this plan should, you know, this will work. And so there's lots of hurdles to overcome, but yes, I hear what you're saying, understand, and I'll get that over to you, and you guys can take a look.
This is Barry. What you said, that there's districts involved or included in it that are walking it back or walking away from it. What are their reasons for it? What's not working about it?
I understood Brent's comment was that Jackrabbit maybe is saying they're not, essentially they're going to lean on the agreement with UD6, and that they're not really going to play ball with this resource sharing group. And maybe, and I wasn't at Jackrabbit's meeting, so I misunderstood that.
No, that's correct. They said that their agreement with UD6 is priority over the Langham Creek sharing agreement.
Yeah, and so and I am at least aware of, I think, one other district that may be contemplating the same. I don't know. Again, I don't want to speak for others, but
no.
I think the concern, Barry, is that the plan's been in place. It's never been effectively deployed. The plan has never been utilized. You know, we've had Harveys, we've had freezes, we've had other things, and the plan's never effectively been deployed. And so I think these districts are starting to kind of look around and say, hey, what's the benefit? But again, that's just my perception.
All right.
Well, it may be that this plan's too big, where if you take UD6 and Jackrabbit, they have a plan that works between them, where just they help each other out.
Yeah.
And if you get five people, then it's not as clear-cut.
It's called an interconnect. And usually when we have a problem at the plant, or we're doing some construction, or for some reason our water supply is interrupted, we usually go on interconnect with 183. So it's only during times of disaster or large, natural occurrences that force our hand, and they haven't been forced very much in the past, even during Harvey. During Harvey, the biggest issue for us was wastewater, because the wastewater plant was completely submerged or mostly submerged. And that presents its own set of problems, but we're in a resource sharing agreement, kind of, when it comes to the waste treatment plant. So let's just get a copy of that. And I don't see any advantage to continuing to discuss this until we've all had a chance to look at that agreement. Brent, did you have something else about that meeting?
that's all. There's nothing else to report at this time.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Brent. Operations report, Keith.
Okie doke. Better make it quick. I know tonight's been run long. For the month of April there, total connections, 1,079. Six of those deemed vacant. Received 87,781.89 in revenue. Your well produced 99,000 gallons. Received the 9.467 from the authority. Billed out 9,705,000 gallons, so we accounted for 102% of the water. Beneath that is your aid receivables. Fairly good shape there. We'll talk about delinquent accounts and balances here in a minute. We had 8 leaks in the district, service lines and main lines. We took the 4 bacteriological samples, and those results were good. There were no taps this month, 0 for the year. And then the second page there is the historical water production and accountability history. Again, so there towards the bottom, you'll see the numbers for the period ending April 1st. And then the 2 graphs there showing the water production 2020 to 2021, and then the same for accountability. The page following that, the summary of our invoice, along with the invoices that were sent to your bookkeeper for direct payment, the source point solutions that was related to sanitary sewer stoppage, and the Enviro services. They do rear easement sanitary sewer work. Following page is the commercial usage. Really nothing to note there other than, you know, we're starting to move towards summer and we're going to see consumption continue to increase. Following that, the monthly water plant log sheet just showing your well production along with surface water received for the calendar month of April. You know, we've started to see the well run. So guys, just as a reminder, you know, that the way that the controls are set up in the plant pre-rehab and now post is that the surface water runs in lead. If the level in the tank continues to fall, given demand, then the well will call and run. So obviously, like I said, and this is not uncommon. We see this every year during the summer months. Your well can, you know, starts to run to kind of make up that difference. The page following that is one uncollectible account for your review and approval, totaling $3.64. It was final back in December of last year, so we applied the deposit on file, and this is the amount remaining. And then following that is your unpaid list. So Neil had sent me an email prior to tonight's meeting just kind of saying, hey, let's have a conversation about delinquent accounts. And so let me, you know, first let me say that historically, delinquent accounts, service terminations, everything else has really been a non-issue in 136. And really all of this, just as by way of reminder, this is in large part the byproduct of us having held off on terminations really all throughout most of 2020. The freeze came, there was the order from the PUC along with the request from the judge from Harris County that said, hey, hold off on any sort of terminations up until April 30. And so now this is kind of our first bite at the apple, if you will, kind of outside of that PUC and Harris County ask post freeze. And so, you know, you've got 8 accounts that are on this list of the 31 that have larger balances. So generally speaking, if you were to go back, you know, 2019, this list is generally going to, I mean, it's going to generally represent 60 days of service, being that we bill in arrears. Once you're 30 days delinquent, there's already another bill coming behind it. And so most of what you see here is in line with what we would see, you know, pre-COVID, pre-freeze, and that's roughly 60 days of service. You've got these 8 accounts that have these larger balances, some of which are already actively in payment plans, others that are not. And so really, Neil, or to the board, my recommendation, what we're doing elsewhere is that now that we've kind of moved out of the freeze provision, is still, you know, obviously it's going to be difficult for us to approach a customer that owes us or owes the district $1,400 to say, hey, make the payment now or we're going to cut your water off. However, what we've been doing is providing them a door tag and asking them to contact our office to make partial payment and to establish a payment plan. And so long as they do that, their services will remain on. If they default from that payment arrangement, then really the only tool that we have in our tool belt to try to put any sort of teeth in that is for us to cut the water off and cut it off, and then kind of work with them again on trying to re-up, you know, payment. So again, that's what we've done elsewhere, and it's proven to be effective. And so again, my ask or my recommendation to you all is that you guys would authorize us to notify accounts that are outside of just that typical 60-day window, asking them to contact their office, establish a payment plan, make partial payment, and then should they default on that payment plan, that we would terminate services. The only thing that I would, I guess, look for from you guys is you know, how far out do you want that payment arrangement to run? You know, generally what we're seeing is three months kind of on the low end, 6 months on the high end. You know, if you guys have any sort of preference there, otherwise, you know, 3-4 months, and we, you know, we'll work with the customers to set up that payment plan.
This is Barry. You know, I think it's time to start trying to collect some of these, and I think 6 months certainly is as far out as I'd like to see it go. I think if they come to us and make a good faith effort to pay off their bill in 3 months, I think that's fine. Over.
Adam, I agree with Barry. Over.
Excuse me, Neil. This is Colin Bear. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is there, I noticed one of these people is a very elderly neighbor of mine who's more than 90. Is there a way that someone like me could pay the bill for her? I don't know how we would go about that.
So she's on this list?
Yes, sir.
I would say that would be between you. It's certainly appreciated by your neighbor. I think it's a very nice thing that you would plan to do. We could certainly work with her. If there are special or extenuating circumstances, we want to be able to work with people. But if you would like to do that, that would be wonderful on your part. I would put you in touch with Keith, who's also on this call, and you could work that out. Is that what you would suggest, Keith?
Yes, sir. That's fine. And we also have, you know, not to belabor the point, but we also have pledge agencies that we try to push towards customers. So if, you know, really the primary issue that we have now is that so long as we're not cutting off water, people don't communicate with us. They don't tell us what's going on. They don't, you know, so we're kind of left in the dark. Once we can kind of force their hand to start communicating with us, you know, whether that be, you know, through a neighbor or whatever else, we have some other resources that we've tried to use to help these folks as much as we can. I mean, I don't want anyone without water any more than anyone else does. So,
Colleen, if you would be in touch with Keith Arant, who's on this call, you could email him or give him a call, and I'm sure your neighbor would appreciate that.
Is your email address on your website?
It's not. I can give it to you, though. It's karrant, ARRANT, at municipalops.com.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is one account on here that Barry's gonna laugh because it's on his block. But I mean, it's a property owner who still owns the property and still has the water account, but there's a renter living in the house. You know, I don't want to be in a position where we're cutting off water for a renter and he doesn't even know, you know, that there's an account in arrears. So I don't know how you handle a situation like that.
Yeah, I mean, we've, you know, on all of these accounts, we've continued, even though we're not cutting people off, I mean, every month we're still sending out delinquent notices. And while it may be addressed to the old homeowner, the notice, the door tags, they're still being hung. And Barry and I have talked about this. I'm assuming it's the same account. He and I have talked about it a couple of times. You know, the our hands are kind of tied in that we kind of have to sit on our hands and wait for a new tenant or whomever to initiate. Hey, you know, or that really the way that it should work is the prior account holder. I mean, it would be in their interest to close that account, and then when that's done, you know, hopefully someone's going to follow suit and notify us that they need to set up service. But if we have a closed account and we start to see consumption, then it's very easy for us to kind of nip that in the bud early on, to kind of force the hand to set up service. But in this case, the prior account holder's done nothing to communicate with us their intent to want to close that account.
Neil, this is Glenn.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure I know who you're talking about, and we are attempting to find that person, but we are working on it, and that person is now in Austin, is what we believe. But I guess if we find out, I have to find out whether or not we could share that information if we find them.
Okay. All right. Okay, so you have whatever guidance you need from us, Keith?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is there anything else on your report? I know that there might be a couple other instances within the community that we need to question you about.
This is Barry. I've got one question for you, Keith.
Yes, sir.
I see that is 183 still not billed us for the water, interconnect water?
No, sir. I've had a couple of conversations with them, as well as our guys in the field. I mean, we're looking at it's in the neighborhood of 23, 24 million gallons over that entire span. You know, based upon the interconnect agreement, based upon how I've read it, and again, I'll square all this up. But I mean, it's going to be a hundred some odd thousand dollar invoice, but when it's all said and done.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Oh, God. I had no idea. Boy. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But let me also preface that it's not quite as bad as maybe it sounds, because 90-some-odd thousand of that 100,000 is West Harris County Regional Water Authority fees, which are assessed from 183 to 136, and you guys have been collecting that through y'all's monthly bills, other than the folks that haven't paid. So, I mean, there's a large portion of revenues that you guys have received that have not had a corresponding expense because y'all have not been purchasing water from the authority directly. So it sounds a lot worse than it is, but again, just so y'all can't say I didn't tell you.
Well, this is Barry. We're just paying water from one source rather than the other source.
That's correct. I mean, really the only hit to 136 is you're going to pay them, and I'm kind of going on memory here, but I think it's 50 cents per 1,000 gallons. So, I mean, that's the only real expense apart from the authority, if that makes sense. I mean, but again, you haven't had the expense of running your plant during that period of time. So, go ahead.
Who's up?
If y'all are okay with it, I've got a few other things briefly to touch on.
Go ahead.
So while we're talking about the delinquent accounts, there's one account that's not on the list, and that's just because their usage or their account's in dispute. So it's an unoccupied home, off of Heather Sage. They had a leak during the freeze. The homeowner, and it's set up by like a property management company, that they swear up and down that they had no leak, they had no issues. We read the meter, you know, so our billing period that kind of fell over the freeze was February 2nd to March 3rd. During that period, that customer or that home metered 321,000 gallons. Our system kicks that out and says, hey, there's a high read, you know, what's going on? So we door tagged the customer. We did all that thing. We went out and cut the water off on the 8th. From March 3rd to March 8th, they consumed 121,000 gallons. And so the customer's disputing, there's no leak, you know, this money isn't owed, whatever else. I mean, the meter's still off because we turned it off. You know, we've asked them to provide any sort of proof of repair or, you know, something like that. And really all they've given us is just kind of a there's a handwritten receipt from a plumber saying they inspected the property and, you know, no issues, whatever else. So the total balance on their account today is right at $3,100. And so their ask is for some, sort of adjustment or whatever else that it may be from the district. Again, you know, I can't authorize any sort of adjustment, you know, based upon that kind of consumption without any sort of, you know, and again, I don't even have anything that I could show you from them that would indicate, hey, there was a leak, it's been fixed, whatever else it may be. We might go turn the water on tomorrow and it continue to consume, you know, tons of water.
Has that meter been pulled and tested?
Yes, sir. It has been pulled because we've got a new meter in the ground. I'll have to try to put my hands on the test result from that prior meter, but yes.
Did we have a corresponding under-reporting of water, like during that month? You said 320,000 went through in what period?
February 2nd to March 3rd.
So basically 1 month.
Yes, sir.
300, what was it, 320,000 gallons?
321,000. We read it on March 3rd. We went back out on the 8th. So from March 3rd to March 8th, it had already consumed another 100,000 gallons. And
oh.
Again, the home has been vacant, so there's been no consumption leading up to the freeze.
The home was vacant during that whole period?
I mean, there was an active account, but there was no consumption from November of last year till February.
My garden hose on full blast runs 3,000 gallons a day, if I remember right. So that's like that's a full on like pipe just going straight out.
I don't see how that's even possible to use that much water.
Well, and if that leak's real, I mean, that house sounds like it's about to fall into a sinkhole. What I'd be worried about.
Well, you know, and I can, you know, up until this point, we've not, you know, I can go out there and meet with the customer. We can turn the water on, and, you know, we can approach this any number of ways, and I'm happy to do whatever we can do on our end to try to help the customer and figure out the problem. But you know, the ask, you know, from them is for some sort of break on, you know, the water bill. And you know, everything on our end seems to point towards they had a leak. I don't know the severity, and they consumed a ton of water.
Well, I think before we work with them on some kind of adjustment, we need to be 100, well, I doubt we can get to 100%, but we need to be very, very sure that there's not an issue with our metering at that house or something, because, I mean, it'd be one thing if you said they had 75 or 80,000 gallons, but 3,000 gallons during the course of a month, I can't even conceive of a usage other than an open fire hydrant that would use that much water. I mean, I mean, we saw some leaks after the February freeze that, I mean, there was one leak on Oakhampton, not right behind my house, that Barry and I saw. And I mean, it was pouring water out of that. And I'd like to see what their water bill is like. But as much water as he was losing for probably 3 or 4 days at least, I don't think it's going to approach the kind of over, you're talking about
over 30 days. I mean, and again, I'm assuming that the leak occurred during the freeze, so roughly middle of February. I mean, it's, you know, over 30 days, that's about a 7 gallon per minute leak, which isn't, I mean, it's obviously a ton of water, but I mean, that's very much doable. You know, and so if we assume it happened in the middle of February, then it's a 14 gallon per minute leak. I mean, so, you know, fire hydrant to 14 gallons per minute. I mean, those are very, very different things.
Well, let's exhaust whatever diagnostic tools we have to assist the customer. And if at the end of using all those diagnostic tools, we just reach the conclusion that the water went through the meter and it's their responsibility, then we can talk about, you know, whether or not there's something we can do.
Okay. I'll do it. Moving on, if you guys are okay with it.
Yeah.
I also included in my email to you all, there's a GM services report. I'll make this short just because it's been long. But again, GM services go out, they go out to the water plant twice a year. They test the well. Really, the page that I look at primarily is the fourth page of that document. Jane, if you would scroll down to that graph, that one right there. So if you look to the bottom of that spreadsheet to the far right-hand side, you'll see the results from that April 2021 test. You'll see the static level, which is just the water level without the well pumping. You see capacity, gallons per minute, and then you see the pumping level. The difference being, you know, the difference from the static to the pumping level is what they call the drawdown. So we want to see how much does that aquifer drop when that well pump begins to produce water. So really what we want to look for is we want to see that there's not been any sort of drastic or real change in your capacity in gallons per minute that doesn't correlate to a change in the water level. So as the water level in the aquifer drops, you're going to lose capacity just because that well pump has to work that much harder to get water to the surface. So if you guys look, you know, you can see back in April of 2020, your capacity was right at 1,000 gallons per minute. April of this year, right at, you know, 1,012. So that's all good indications. If we saw that number fall off in comparison to maybe prior years, April of 2020, so on and so forth, then that could begin, you know, that could show that there was some sort of issue downhole that doesn't correlate to water level, whether it's the pump bowl assembly, whatever else it may be. So long story short, everything looks to be in good shape on your well. But again, just wanted to provide this to you guys for review, since it was recently completed.
How often do we run this test?
Twice a year.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I also included just a picture of the muffler. I know Barry and I had a conversation. I know it's been a long time coming, and I apologize for the backdrop, but
I didn't see that.
The muffler is here. It was supposed to be in late this week, but that particular gentleman, he got tied up on a job earlier this week, so I'm gonna touch base with him. I was hoping to have it in before tonight so that I could tell you guys it's been and done, but I did want to at least show you it's here, it's arrived, and if nothing else, I'll have that thing on the unit by next week. I also included in the next page, Jane, that was supposed to be an aerial of the water plant. If you guys go back to that email that I sent you, I guess for some reason kind of the left half of that picture got cut off here. But if you were to go back to that email that I had originally sent, if that's not too much trouble, you'll actually see the water plant. And so the intent of this picture was just to show you guys kind of the general layout of the lighting that was discussed over the last couple months. And I don't know if you guys have found that email. You know, ultimately it's, you know, what's being spec'd, is the wooden post, as Neil had asked, kind of in between that, generator building and that entry gate, kind of along that driveway. We're going to install a post, with two lights, one facing the plant, the other facing that fence line that's on the west side of the property. Those are both going to be 150 watt LED lights, on the front of the generator building. And then on the side, there would be two 150 watt LED lights. And then currently what's spec'd, and if you guys want to lessen or whatever else, is two 50 watt LED lights that are on the back side of that building, kind of towards that West Harris County, pumps, you know, their piping where the water is coming into the plant. So that's what was kind of at least intended, whenever we spoke last month. If you guys are good with that, we can get that ball rolling. If you guys have any other questions, concerns, if you want to add things, take things away, let me know, and I can get with those guys, and we can do whatever we need to do.
Do you have a cost estimate on that lighting?
It's right at
right at $8,000 is what I told you last month. I mean,
is that primarily for the power pole, the electric pole, or the light pole?
Yeah, you know, a fair amount of it's just the labor, getting the conduit buried, you know, pulling the wire and everything else. I mean, the materials that we're talking about here is really not all that much.
An estimate is good enough.
$8,800 is the number I have.
Okay. All right.
This is Brent. I would like to see pictures of the fixtures. You're saying it's in the email?
No, I didn't. And the email was just the aerial showing kind of the layout.
I just am interested in the fixtures being those kind of like West Harris County has over by their site where the light doesn't escape our property. And the
yes,
light.
Sir. Yes, sir.
So we don't want to light up somebody's backyard.
Yes, sir. I will. I can get that over to you. I did have that conversation. I know Brent, you and I, you had mentioned that to me previously. I did stress to the contractor that whatever we do on the pole or the building, we've got to make sure that it's facing down, kind of like the lights that are on that new control room. So we want to provide some light in the area, but we don't want to, you know, we don't want it to be lit up like a ball field and have neighbors and whatnot, you know, complaining.
I mean, I think the most important thing is that MLC has lights where they can conduct work after hours as needed. So if there's areas where you might be out there checking something, you know, those are the areas that hopefully are covered.
Yes, sir. Yeah, no, and I believe that to be the case. I mean, we've got, you know, the booster pump stations, everything else, that's fairly well lit. You've got all the electrical, you've got the bucket for the well controls, the transfer switch, all that stuff, you know, it's all on the backside of that building. And then you've got the West Authority stuff. So I think we'll be in pretty good shape. So if you guys are good, I'll get the ball rolling. Brent, I can get you a picture of what we got, but what I'll tell you is we won't walk away from it until you guys are content that we're not gonna, you know, we're not putting light where you don't want it.
This is Barry. Yeah, I'd like Brent to see the specs on the light fixtures.
Okay.
You know, to make sure that they have hoods on them or something to keep, I'm assuming that is what you want to see, Brent, is a hood to keep them from spreading light out all over the place.
Yeah, yes, like West Harris County has at the work light or light they have over by their
equipment.
Yeah, by their equipment.
Okay.
I'll do it. Dan, if you would scroll to the next page, trying to wrap this up here. So this is just a picture of that die test on those 284-inch phone lines, the one that's, I guess, on the northern side. So there's that depression that we talked about. I climbed down in there. You know, everything appeared perfectly fine. Structurally, there was no issues. When we did the die test, you'll see. So that's at the very top end of that manhole. So obviously, you see kind of the light coming in the top of the ladder coming in the top of the manhole. And then that pipe that you see in the top of that picture, that's the, you know, obviously the top edge of that 84-inch line. So, it's a square manhole. So once you come through the throat, you know, it widens to in order to fit that 84-inch line. It kind of pivots within that manhole. So you can see where that die test showed up. You know, the fix is really short and sweet, nothing, you know, significant, but being that it's not our facility, and as Bob mentioned, you know, he's coordinating with Flood Control to get those guys in the know and hopefully get out there to bite some sap plug or something on that to seal it.
And will that include, well, we don't know until Harris County comes out, but I guess they'll backfill and repair the sinkhole.
I doubt it, but we can, and that's
okay.
Little to nothing. But unless you guys tell me different, I would say let's wait until we know it's fixed, and then we'll come in and clean it up. If we do it now, you know, if we get a rain event, all it's going to do is pull whatever we put there, some of it, into that manhole anyways.
Mr. Barry, one other thing, that there was a small inlet, yard area inlet next to the sidewalk about,
yes, sir,
I don't know, 8 or 10 feet away.
Yes, sir.
And is that pipe going into that main?
It is.
Form line?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Keith, did you have anything else?
One more thing.
Water Smart.
Water Smart, that's all in the works. The application, that's in good shape there. The last item tonight is the consumer confidence report. So these are the next several pages there that Jane has up.
Hold off on that until we approve your report.
Okay. Sorry.
The sign at the corner of Winslong Trail and Oakhampton, the mud sign is crooked and needs some attention. So next time you have somebody out in the neighborhood, could you go by there and kind of fix it back? I don't know if it's the TCEQ sign or the Water Smart or the mud. I don't think it's a mud sign, but it's like it's come loose on one side.
Sure. I'll get it taken care of.
Also, we had gotten a request. I received a request from a neighbor north of the water plant who was wondering whether or not we couldn't do something to power wash or clean our ground storage tank because she's getting ready to sell her house or list her house, and she wants the storage tank to look nicer. So I had somebody from the community who has a power washing cleaning company come out and look, and he said he'd check with his insurance company to see whether he can do the job, and found out that he couldn't because he's not approved to do that kind of job. So we've got a couple of tanks. The north ground storage tank probably needs some attention at some point. Just needs to be cleaned up a little bit. If you've got somebody on staff or that can do that kind of thing, or if, you know, we have to contract out at some point to do that. And also I noticed that the hydro tanks are pretty gnarly looking and need to be cleaned. And Javier said that they might be able to do some of the vegetation work around those hydro tanks. So could you look at that and kind of evaluate, you know, what needs to be done and about what that would run us?
Yes, sir. I sure will. We actually recently did it at another water plant, and it's not a perfect apples to apples, but, you know, I think a ballpark cost for 136, if we did both GSTs and the two HPTs, is probably $2,500 bucks. Somewhere in that ballpark, but I can try to harden that number up if we need to.
Having been out there the other day as part of this, you know, walk around, I don't even think the southern ground storage tank needs any work at all. It's just mainly the northern one, and the hydro tanks are pretty mildewed and algaed up, mm-hmm. So they definitely need to be cleaned out.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you could get us an estimate on that, I'd appreciate it.
Sure.
This is Barry. I would like to add, I hope the high-pressure washing of those tanks doesn't reduce the lifespan of the paint job on them, because that's quite expensive.
I'll tell you, we've done it before. I mean, and Brent probably knows more about coating than me, but I've never seen it present an issue. I mean, we're not doing it with enough pressure or close enough to the tank that we're pulling any sort of that coating off. It's just we're hitting it with enough water to clean it up.
Agree, Brent.
I agree, as long as the, you know, what you're washing with shouldn't affect the paint.
Okay.
I agree, it doesn't affect the paint. And I also hope that this person on the north side is not the one that was throwing debris over their fence.
No, sir.
It's not the same person?
Well, Javier said it was. So, but anyway.
I think it's the house next door, but I'm working on that.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the first time. So.
Okay. Let me ask you, there are some serious ruts west of Tarnbrook, at the easement, the pipeline easement. Do you know who put those ruts there? It's not MLC, I take it.
No, sir. Yeah, after we spoke, I kind of went back and started visiting with guys and looking at work orders and whatnot. And to my knowledge, I've not found any. No one said that they were over there, and I've not found any work order that would have required us to be there. So, wasn't us. If yeah.
I just want to make sure if it was us that we did something to, you know, to remediate that, take care of it. But if it's not us, then it's not really, it's more of an HOA concern.
This is Adam. There were pipeline surveyors out there this week. They had the gate open. So, yeah, they've been out there messing around, I guess, getting ready.
Great. Okay. All right. Is there anything else on operations, Keith?
The last item, and I'm sorry, one of the items on the punch list at the water plant, if you guys recall when we did that walkthrough, y'all heard those pumps kind of surging their speed quite frequently. That was one of the items that was added. The VFB guy was a sub of a sub, I think, and I just happened to have his contact. Dealt with him some during the freeze. And so I called him, and he came out and has made some changes, and that seems to have all been resolved. So I can tell you that item has been taken care of. And I just kind of, instead of going through Bob, I just called him and got him out there. So.
Neil, you're muted. Still muted.
You're muted, Neil.
Sorry. It's been one night. Do I hear a motion to approve the operations report, authorize repairs and termination of service to the Lincoln account? Oh, no termination at this time.
We're going to door tag, and if they don't respond, yeah. we're going to cut them off.
Okay. All right. So the agenda item goes as written. Do I hear a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Adam, second.
Okay, motion second. Do we have any discussion?
Just to clarify, that means we're back to normal as far as terminating service.
Yes. Other than accounts that are more than 60 days delinquent, we're going to try to allow them that payment arrangement,
right. And if they don't respond, that's just a detail on how they respond.
Correct.
But if
there's an account during this current billing period that doesn't pay their bill, we're going to provide notification for your rate order. If they don't respond, we're going to cut them off.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, I'll take a vote on a roll. Polanski votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0. Okay, thank you. Consumer confidence report.
All right. So just as a reminder, this is an annual drinking water report as required for the TCEQ due to your customers July 1 of each year. Keep in mind that in large part, the layout of the document, the data that's in it, the contaminants that are sampled for is all determined by the TCEQ. So the frequency of samples and everything else, that's not something that MUD 136 decides, something that we decide. That's all decided by the state. So really on the first page, really nothing different than what you guys have seen in years past. The only thing that I'll point out is that obviously in the top left-hand corner, we show, public input opportunity, and we show that the meeting is held at the clubhouse. Obviously over the last year, that's not proven true with COVID. We're working on trying to get some direction from various attorneys as to how to best handle that. So I'll coordinate with Jane and Dimitri, and we'll get that cleaned up, prior to sending out. the meat of the document comes on the third page there. If you look there, you'll see to the left-hand side there, you'll see the various years the various contaminants were sampled for. To the right of that, you'll see the contaminant. To the right of that, you'll see the highest level detected for that given contaminant. The range of levels, so if there was multiple samples collected, so if you were to look at the, like, if you were to look kind of towards the middle of that page, it's called the HA5s or cambioacetic acids, you'll see that there's the 15.8 to the 32.8, so there's obviously multiple samples collected. If you see that value is the same, and there's one sample collected. To the right of that, MCL stands for maximum contaminant level. MCLG is your maximum contaminant level goal. And then units. And then to the far right there, obviously the most important column, violation, you'll see that there's no violations in 136, that everything's in compliance with the TCEQ. Again, just want to remind you, you know, the frequency and what we're sampling for, that's all determined by the state. And in large part, these samples and the data are based upon samples that are collected in the district by a contractor to the state. So a lot of this stuff isn't even based on samples that we collect. If you scroll to the following page, if you can scroll back up one more time, kind of the bottom half of that page, because you guys received water from 183 via interconnect, we're required to show their information as well. So that's what you see there towards the bottom. Again, the document works the same. And then the following page, because we receive water from the West Authority, the same logic applies. We show their information as well. So again, in large part, this document is in the same form as years past. Would ask you guys to approve this evening, subject to any sort of final review or comments from you guys or your attorney. Certainly, if you guys take a look at it, have any questions or concerns, feel free to reach out to us. Again, it's due to customers July 1. The last thing that I'll mention is that over the last several years, the TCEQ has allowed that these documents be sent out electronically. So prior to that, we would have actually printed all of these, stuffed them in the bill, and mailed them out with that monthly water bill. Now we just include a kind of a third of a page slip that's inserted into the bill that has kind of some canned language from the state. And it provides a URL, which is a direct link to this document. Generally, we point them towards, we host the document on our website, and so that URL directs them to our website, but it goes directly to just a page that only has 136's document and as far as CCR. Adam or board, if you guys want us to shove them towards your website, Adam, I can get you the document. We can do that, too. We just need that URL so we can include that in that book slip. That's all I have for you on the CCR.
I would think that we need to have that either linkable or have the document itself. Don't we have CCRs on the website, Adam?
Yes, we've got a separate section for it, and this one is already on our website.
This one in particular?
Yeah, that's the one that was mailed this week, and yes, it's on the website right now.
Okay, so we definitely need to approve it, right?
well, we put all of, like, I mean, all the reports that haven't been approved are all on the website.
Yeah.
For the meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, if it changes, Adam, I'll let you know. I mean,
okay.
In the process of review. But.
Okay. All right. So basically, you just need. So, do you want us to review it? You want us to approve it, subject to additional review?
Yes, sir. If you guys are okay with that, if you guys would give me your approval tonight, and then certainly, like I said, you know, we're going to coordinate with Norton Rose. So, you know, if they have any comments, revisions, corrections, we'll incorporate that prior to sending it out in final form for that July 1 deadline, and then also for you guys, if you guys take a look, if you have any questions, concerns, any issues. You know, let me know and we can include that as well. But if you guys are good with it, if I could get your approval of the document in its current form, subject to any sort of final review or revision.
Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve the CCR?
Adam makes a motion.
Eric seconds.
Okay, we have a motion, second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll. Director Polansky votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries 5-0. You've got it. Everybody take a look at it and understand that the format that it takes is like you said, is pretty much standard and set. But if we have some issues with any of the verbiage or anything like that, then let's communicate that to Keith, and we'll go from there. So should we keep the Keith? We should keep it on the website for now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fine. If prior to July 1, I'll confirm with our compliance folks if anything's changed. If it has changed, then I'll get a copy to Adam. I mean, I'll send a copy to all of you guys, and Adam can update it.
Okay. All right. Okay. Skipping to agenda item number 10, unless you all want to talk about agenda item number 9 again. Didn't think so. Report on West Harris County monthly meeting. Did anybody attend, I guess, virtually? Eric Worthington, did you go?
No, I said I was not going to attend this month.
Okay, all right. Okay, skip to number 11. Discuss West Harris County Regional Water Authority plan to install 84-inch water lines through the district and a planned community meeting with the DVCA in West Harris County. The only thing that basically that we need to talk about is the fact that they're going to have an in-person and virtual meeting on this water line project on the 17th, which is Monday. Eric Touray, are you there? Anyway, it's going to be at the Learfield Rec Center.
Sorry, and I'm here. Yes, sir. I was muted. Yes, it is going to be at the clubhouse. We also have a Zoom call-in number for residents that would like to hear the response from the authority. They're coming out. They're not actually physically going to be there. They're going to be virtually there. We've got an agenda that's posted on the website, the Deerfield website, that we worked on together as a group. And so that's the primary information we're going to cover. And we have a section for residential inquiries as well. So we start at 6 o'clock, 6 p.m.
Eric, this is Neil. They've already said that they're not providing anybody in person, huh?
That is correct.
All right. So we have, Jane has prepared an agenda for that meeting. So we're going to treat it like a regular MUD 136 meeting, just from the standpoint of we might have a quorum. And if we have a quorum, we need to list it as a meeting. And I'm sure if more than three of us or three or more attend, we'll probably have some questions or comments of our own, because we have a vested interest in how they do this project. So anyway, let's see how that meeting goes. It's Monday at 6, right?
It's Monday at 6. I encourage everybody to come that's interested in this. They'll be prepared to discuss the safety and dates and times of the project and so forth. So it ought to be a very good meeting.
Okay. All right. Thanks for hosting that, Eric.
Sure.
Okay. Agenda item number 12, district website. Adam, anything to report?
Yeah, the big thing, well, we've had an issue with not being able to submit comments on the contact us section. I emailed back and forth to the consultant from Empire Design Group that created the website, and they said they think the problem is that we have set a limit on the website of how many messages can be sent per day, and apparently that limits total messages and not how many messages a single person can submit per day. So the problem was that the first I think it was two or three, the first two or three messages that went in that were submitted on the website, then locked everything else out. And we've got enough, I guess, Russian bots scouring the internet and still putting spam into forms that it was locking the website down. So that has, we changed that, and hopefully that now fixes the problem with contact us. I also wanted to address Ms. Vera had an issue about contacting people for public information requests. On our contact us form on the website, if you just fill out the forms, the first one has a general person to email it to, and that those messages get stored on the website, but if you pick any individual director to send a message to, that all goes directly to any of our emails. And usually you will get a quick response from a director. I'm gonna definitely recommend we keep that general section there because all of the spam gets filtered out by that. That's the big, I guess, hopefully we've now fixed that issue we were having with people having issues contacting us through the contact us section of the website.
Yeah, this is Glenn Summers. I'm looking, and it does look different, like you can actually do it now. I did notice that you don't have the directors in correctly. You still have Jay Singleton as one of the directors. See a general inquiry, Neil, Barry, Brent, Jay, and Adam, Eric.
Okay, yeah, I will. We replaced Jay with Eric in some places, and that is one place we still need to fix, so I will fix that.
I'm sorry, this is calling there. I didn't understand. I went to the website. I don't understand. You want me to put a request for public information in the regular contact us box?
I suggest that she not go through the website and just go directly to Jane.
Yeah, and like I said, we can add Jane's contact information to the. We've got the attorney listed, so we can add an email under Norton Rose Fulbright that will go to Jane for public information requests.
Okay, thank you. Because it should say that this is a public information request, so because if they don't send it to the right person by law, you don't have to respond. Thank you.
Okay, anything else on the website, Adam?
That's all I have on the website.
Okay, how about the text message notification system?
Okay, so we have a trial going. I think it lasts a couple more days. Looks like everybody's been able to create an account to receive text messages, and we've sent out a couple of messages that looks like they are going through. I think the next step then is to basically convert our trial account into a real account. I have asked the owners of the website how we're going to handle payment because it's a website that prefer to do credit card, but we don't usually do credit cards. So I'm seeing if we can get a monthly invoice that would be sent to us to pay for the service that way. But yeah, once we have the full account, then we can start our campaign to get people signed up probably next door in the newsletter. But I don't want to have people signed up until it's active. So we need to, again, starting the account, no problem. It's getting the payment that we'll have to figure out.
So have a discussion with Fran.
Okay.
I'm sure we're not the only MUD that has a text notification system, and she probably has, a procedure put in place for, paying that either monthly or 6 months or whatever the billing cycle is for those companies.
Okay.
And if I can jump in quick, I'd much rather go through Fran and whatever, but Adam just, or board just say on that. I mean, if we need to pay it for you on your behalf, I mean, that's an option as well. And I mean, I know you guys don't want to pay any more for the service than you need to, but if
if we do pay it, it's going to be marked up, but that's something that we can do as well if that helps. Just throwing it out there.
Okay.
And Adam, this is Jane. I tried to go to their website the other day to find, I think they had a section for a service agreement on their website, but when we tried to pull it up, nothing popped up.
Okay.
If you're able to get a hold of that and send it to us, that would be great so we could see what it is.
Okay. Yeah, I will request that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, all right. I would like to get that system up and operational as it can be, Adam, real close to the beginning of hurricane season.
All right.
I mean, I don't expect a hurricane on June 1, but that notification system needs to be 100% operational within a few weeks of that. All right.
One final thing on that. This is Grant. I think we should go ahead and create a procedure for sending text messages. And it's just like what rises to the level to send and how does it go about. And we need to have a process for that. So just be thinking about that. Let's go ahead and do that.
Yeah. Right. Not only a process and a set of criteria for determining what qualifies as something that the board sends out as a text message, but like a decision tree as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Think about all that ahead of time. So.
Okay. Anything else, Adam?
No, that's it on website and text message.
Okay. Barry, DVCA article, would you do that?
Yes, I'll be glad to.
Okay, thank you. And cybersecurity training reminder, we already talked about that. Unless you hear anything different, if you have not taken the training, you've got basically a month to do it. Jones and Carter has a link on one of the emails that Jane sent to us. It's about as boring as it gets. It is not a pleasant watch. But they want us to do it. So unless you hear otherwise, everybody needs to get that certificate. And that, I guess, is it. Agenda items for the meeting of June 10th. We'll decide. I guess I'll have a discussion or so, not only with Eric Toure, but I'll have a discussion with Dimitri and occasionally with one of you guys about whether or not we need an interim special meeting. But if we don't have a special meeting, then we'll see you all on the 10th. I was going to try to discuss whether or not we need to at some point, and we need to start thinking about starting to meet in person again.
Yes.
You know, that is something we can also be thinking about and provide feedback to each other about the logistics of meeting in person again. And we might even consider that for June, for our June meeting, being that we may be down at the rec center for this meeting next Monday night. That might give us a feel for how we can go about doing an in-person meeting. But that's the trend. I think we can start thinking about in-person meetings again.
Yeah, one final comment on that is I think if we go to in-person meetings, which I'm good with, I think we should not do a video or recording option or call-in option. It needs to be all or nothing.
This is Jane. One of our attorneys was emailing earlier, and they're going to go back and look and make sure we're doing everything correctly if the governor decides to discontinue the open meeting suspension. So our attorneys are looking at that right now, and if there's any updates, we'll make sure to let you guys know.
Yeah, I would think that that's not a call that I don't think that's a call that we can make. That's well above our pay grade. If they tell us that we can meet in person, but we also need to provide that option of call in or video or whatever, then we need to do that. You know, if they tell us that we don't need to provide that option anymore for meeting in person, then we'll do whatever is appropriate. So Jane, keep us in the loop on that, and just keep in mind that we're considering the possibility of meeting in person June 10th, I guess.
Sure.
Okay, everybody. Thank you for your attendance tonight. Appreciate it. And talk to y'all soon. Bye.
All right.